Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. So head there and engage with us on the stories we will be covering.
That's indeed Jen. Coming up on the program, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is expected to meet with US President Donald Trump to discuss trade and regional security. We hear from DW's Michael Kinigan on what to expect from Trump.
Trump is keen to do business with African countries if he thinks it benefits his own agenda and his view of what's best for America.
Voters in Cameroon have raised concerns over their own safety during the upcoming election in October this year.
I don't think it will be possible for me to go to the polls on October 7th. I remember that during the last senatorial election, some candidates were kidnapped.
Also on the program, United Nations investigators have released a damning report on Myanmar's military, calling for the prosecution of its commanders for crimes against humanity.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to our news briefs first.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. United Nations investigators called for justice against Myanmar generals on Monday after releasing a damning report on atrocities committed against minority Rohingya Muslims. UN investigator Christopher Sidoti told reporters in Geneva that Myanmar's army chief and five other top military commanders must be prosecuted.
The mission has concluded that criminal investigation and prosecution is warranted, focusing on the top Tatmadaw generals in relation to the three categories of crimes under international law: genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes.
More than 700,000 Muslims fled Myanmar into neighboring Bangladesh last August during the government's bloody crackdown. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a long-delayed trial over the killings of UN experts resumed on Monday. The trial, which investigated the deaths of two UN members in Congo's conflict-ridden Kasai region, had been suspended for 10 months. Congo's government blamed the killings on a militia in the region, but rights groups suspect the government may have been involved. Iran urged the UN's top court on Monday to urgently suspend nuclear-linked sanctions against them, saying it strangles their economy and cripples the nation. This comes after U.S. President Trump reimposed sanctions against Iran in May. He alleged that an internationally backed 2015 deal didn't go far enough in curbing Tehran's ability to build nuclear weapons. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Uganda has released singer Bobby Wine on bail on Monday. We go to DW journalist Alex Jita in Uganda for more.
Ugandan popular songwriter Robert Kyagulanyi, known as Bobby Wine, and other opposition members have been given bail by the Ugandan High Court. Kyagulanyi and 33 other people are facing treason charges for reportedly stoning President Yoweri Museveni's convoy. His wife, Babi Yitungo Kyagulanyi, told DW that all she wanted was her husband's freedom.
As his wife, I have been given what I have been asking for. But it hasn't been easy. I'm basically taking my husband to hospital. Whatever he tells me is good for him is what I will do.
Kyagulanyi will be flown out of the country for treatment. The case of Kyagulanyi and his colleagues shone a spotlight on a poor human rights record by Museveni's government as various organizations came out to condemn the torture meted out on the legislators.
British Prime Minister Theresa May has said she would make her first official visit to Africa this week to boast post-Brexit trade ties. She's expected to visit industry leaders in South Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya during her three-day trip. And finally, scientists release a study in the journal Nature Climate Change, saying that rising carbon emissions could make food crops less nutritious. They warned this could endanger the health of hundreds of millions of people. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. You're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And at this moment, we'd like to recognize the presence of Rutarika Alex, who says he's listening from Kigali. Nito Silvanus says he's in Liberia. And Kivumbi Dongu says He's listening loud and clear from Uganda, and so is Ismail Amin. Jamin says he's in Cameroon. We really appreciate. Just tell us what you think about the stories that we are gonna bring to you live from Africa Link right here. Now we begin our story in the US, where Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is expected to meet with the US President Donald Trump. Kenyatta's office says he and Trump will focus on trade and regional security. Kenya is the third highest recipient of U.S. security aid in sub-Saharan Africa. That's according to the Security Assistance Monitor.
Uhuru will also meet with the U.S. business leaders to promote investment. He will be the second African leader to meet with Trump at the White House after Nigeria's Muhammadu Buhari visited the White House earlier this year.
Trump made it clear from the onset that it will always be America first. So, is he keen to do business with Africa? A question I put to DW's Michael Kinige in Washington. Let's take a listen.
Trump is keen to do business with African countries if he thinks it benefits his own agenda and his view of what's best for America. And basically, you're right that he follows his so-called America First agenda, which essentially is a very narrow view of the world and looks at trade basically as a zero-sum game.
Now, what kind of White House will President Uhuru Kenyatta find this time around if you're to compare with the one he visited in 2014 under Barack Obama, when there was talk of all kind of things, including rights of LGBT groups and, of course, fighting corruption? Do you really think that these are things that really bother Donald Trump?
That's an excellent question. And I think it's fair to say that this is a very different White House than the one Kenyatta visited in 2014 while Obama was the occupant. Trump so far has shown himself, to put it politely, to be not very interested in Africa. Not only has he not visited Africa so far in his tenure, he also has said some pretty derogatory things about the continent. Earlier this year, reportedly in remarks about immigrants, he referred to some countries, including some African nations, with an expletive. And a few days ago, he created again a big stir when on Twitter he asked his Secretary of State to look into a false claim of mass killings of white farmers in South Africa. And as far as the issues like good governance are concerned that you mentioned, for example, the fight against corruption or also human and civil rights like gay rights and freedom of the press, this was important for Obama, but they're not really big on Trump's agenda.
Now, Kenyatta will also try to woo American business leaders to invest in Kenya, but the country has its own challenges regarding security and, of course, governance issues. Can we comfortably predict that the meeting with Trump could downplay any fears that investors may have on Kenya?
To be honest, if one can comfortably predict anything about a meeting with Trump, then it is that one can't predict what will happen. On a more serious note, it seems likely that both leaders will sign some kind of business deals that will allow them to claim that it will create jobs for their own constituents.
Interesting insight from our own Michael Kinige in Washington. Now, Jane, lots of comments are streaming in about what to expect between the meeting of Kenyatta and Trump.
Absolutely. Mohamed Bakari says President Kenyatta is not only there as a Kenyan, but rather as an African head of state. Therefore, he should not narrow his discussions and instead discuss the pressing issues in the continent like security, democracy, and economy.
Stan Jacks says they should discuss democracy in the East African community. We have seen how democracy has been violated in Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and Tanzania in by-elections.
We have this one from Stan Jacks. He says that they should discuss democracy in East Africa community. We have seen how democracy has been violated in Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and Tanzania. I think that one you've read it, Isaac.
Don Bonya says Africans should discuss African issues in Africa.
And John Agave, they should discuss how the West will stop exploiting Africa. So those are your comments. Keep them flowing on our Facebook page at DW Africa.
Let's move on to elsewhere away from Africa. UN investigators have released a damning report on Myanmar's military, calling for the prosecution of its commanders for crimes against humanity. The investigators say they orchestrated a military campaign against the country's Rohingya Muslims with, quote, genocidal intent. They also announced they now have enough evidence to prosecute six top generals for their alleged crimes.
Well, Myanmar's brutal crackdown against the Rohingya began a year ago. The army has always denied accusations of ethnic cleansing and insisted it was responding to attacks by Rohingya rebels. The ensuing campaign on arson, rape and murder prompted some 700,000 people to flee to neighboring Bangladesh. DW's Aya Shafenoth takes us back on how the crisis unfolded.
A never-ending line of refugees streaming across the border from Myanmar to Bangladesh. They fled after security forces launched a brutal offensive against them last August. Soldiers looted and torched their homes. They raped, tortured and killed thousands of Rohingya. Across the border in Bangladesh, the refugees have settled in sprawling camps. As they've tried to settle in here, stories of unimaginable horrors have emerged.
Gash rape in the palace.
Soldiers came into every house and shot at us.
They locked me up in my house and then set fire to it. I have burns like this. And worse, all over my body.
Conditions in the camps are cramped and squalid. The huts here are flimsy and built on hilly, sandy ground, prone to landslides. Mustakima fled here with her five children after her husband was killed when the military stormed their village. Two of her previous shacks in the camp were destroyed by water. She is now hoping for a sturdier shelter.
I had to sell my pulses, oil, and even rice for this month. I had to sell to build the house. My relatives told me to make the house strong, even if I were to go hungry.
Aid agencies have warned against an outbreak of waterborne diseases, such as cholera and diphtheria. But Mustakima would rather bear life here than go home.
Even if we have to sleep in a trench, it's better than being back.
But they are not meant to stay here. In January, Myanmar and Bangladesh agreed to repatriate the Rohingya within 2 years. Myanmar has started building transit camps to house the returnees. But the UN has said conditions are not yet right. And so far, barely a handful of Rohingya have returned.
That was DW's Anja Shafenoff with that report. Now, Cameroon's Elections Management Body, ELECAM, has announced that thousands of polling stations in its English-speaking regions will be closed amid threats from armed groups.
Well, many voters say since they are not assured of their safety, they will stay away from the polling stations. Moki Kizenka visited Bamenda and Buea, two major towns in English-speaking regions. His report begins with the chairperson of Cameroon's Elections Body.
Cognizant of the difficulties on the ground here, not only in the northwest but also in the southwest, their fears are genuine. We will reduce the traditional voting centers to only a few, and this will help for the protection of both electors, the ELECAM staff, and the material.
That was the voice of Eno Abrams Egbe, chairperson of the Electoral Board of Cameroon's Elections Management Body, ELECAM. Voters like Omar Yusembo and Foyong Joseph are concerned about their safety if they were to turn up and vote.
Crowds have been circulating videos, audios, messages warning people that if anybody goes out to vote, he will be doing that at his or her own detriment. So when we look at such situations, we cannot go out there because we are risking our lives. We don't know who to believe. We don't know whether there is security, and we don't know if we can be protected.
I don't think it will be possible for me to go to the polls on October 7. I remember that during the last senatorial election, some candidates were kidnapped, and it was thanks to the intervention of some traditional authorities that they were released. So I don't think I will be going out for the elections.
Out of the 7 million eligible voters in Cameroon, 1 million are in English-speaking regions. There are fears that most of them won't be able to vote because of the daily running battles between government forces and armed groups.
Moki Kinzeka with that report.
In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Jane Nyingi.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. And as usual, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see Akampure Robert from Uganda. Also, Osman Bin Afanda Maturi says he's listening from Nigeria. And so is Jabi Abdul Salamu says, hello. Hello back to you.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we hear why some Kenyans are turning to Chinese herbal medicine.
I had a stomach problem. I was not eating food. I was just having pain. He gave me a Chinese herbal medicine. And after a week or two, I started eating well.
Before all that, women's rights organizations Tech the Farm estimates that 65,000 women affected by female genital mutilation, or FGM, are living in Germany.
The brutal practice of female genital mutilation leaves women with terrible physical and emotional scars, and the number of women affected here in Germany is rising. DW's Kate Brady met one Somali woman, Ifra, who is calling for an end to this practice.
And one has to stay in.
I was about 11 or 12 years old. Several people held me down. Then they cut me. They laid me on the table. I can still picture it. I had such horrific pain. Then they sewed me together. They tied my legs together for a month so that the wound would heal.
Types of female genital mutilation vary, anywhere from damaging the clitoris to sewing up the vaginal opening. In some countries, the brutal practice is considered a rite of passage or prerequisite for marriage.
In Somalia, the procedure is done by a so-called cutter. They have no idea what they're doing. They just have a knife and a razor, and they cut. After 2.5 years in Germany, 36-year-old Ifra is seeking advice at Berlin's Desert Flower Center, which offers reconstructive surgery and consultation for women affected by FGM. Dr. Cornelia Strunz advises those affected, but Germany's services and expertise in FGM are still limited.
When I studied medicine, FGM wasn't covered in the subjects. But I know this is changing, and I hope that trend continues. But I still meet colleagues who either know very little or absolutely nothing about FGM.
According to Terre des Femmes, some 65,000 women affected by FGM are living in Germany, an increase of 12% on last year.
This is due to the increase in migration from countries where female genital mutilation is particularly prevalent. For Germany, this means countries like Somalia, Eritrea, and Iraq.
In a statement to Deutsche Welle, Germany's Family and Women's Ministry described female genital mutilation as a human rights violation. During this legislative period, the ministry also plans on working more closely with Germany's youth welfare offices. But when it comes to some parents taking their young daughters back to their home country for a so-called vacation circumcision, there's very little that authorities or the German government can do. Volunteers and teachers therefore play a huge role.
The only way to really gauge what's going on is to have a vigilant society. That particularly means people who work in close contact with families who might potentially subject their daughter to FGM. These people should be particularly attentive.
Terre des Femmes estimates that 15,500 girls living in Germany are in danger of FGM. Ifra fears her 3-year-old is among them.
My 3-year-old daughter hasn't been circumcised yet, but if we're sent back to Somalia, I'm 100% sure that her grandparents will make her undergo the procedure.
But for Ifra's eldest 3 daughters, it's already too late.
That was our fate, those of us who had to experience that. But I'm a fighter. I hope that these women are healthy, and I hope that at some point this ritual will stop.
Kate Brady with that report.
health check.
Now, Africa is fast becoming one of the best customers of traditional Chinese medication.
Chinese massage, also called Tuina and Tai Chi, which are practices that combine specific movements of postures, coordinated breathing and mental focus, is quickly gaining ground in Kenya, especially in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Andrew Asike visited some of these clinics to find out why Kenyans are turning to Chinese traditional medication.
At the Halinga Medicare Plaza in the Kenyan capital Nairobi, the competition is high, with most floors housing Chinese herbal clinics. All facilities get their fair share of customers. The Chinese herbal clinics are not just located here, but all over Nairobi, and they are usually packed with Kenyans avoiding conventional medicine. Armed with very old handwritten medical books, Dr. Zhao Shi, who has perfected ancient Chinese diagnostic techniques, examines a patient.
Okay, so we're going to start with the procedure for osteoarthritis of the knee using acupuncture. We're going to attach the electrodes to the needles in the Xiyan points. Now, as soon as you have sensation, I need you to let me know.
The patient does not feel any pain as hair thin size like needles are inserted across more than 400 acupuncture points across the body as they lie on a cushion table. This treatment has been practiced in Asian countries for years. Being one of the main components of Chinese medicine, the needles are inserted in body parts known as meridians where vital energy flows. The session might last somewhere from 20 to 40 minutes depending on the ailment, as Dr. Zhao tells me. He mentions some of the ailments that his patients seek treatment for.
The most commonly treated conditions in our daily practice, including the pain management, that's a number one, like neck, back pain, all pain conditions. We have so many patients come in for anxiety, stress, headaches, migraines, and also we have many patients coming for fatigue, weight problem, many conditions. Nowadays, with the stress from work and from everywhere, and so many people have anxiety, stress, insomnia problem.
Here, Kenyans receive all sorts of treatments, not just acupuncture alone. For instance, ausculation is one of the diagnostic techniques among four examinations in traditional Chinese medicine. But do these Chinese traditional medicines work? Some Kenyans shared their views.
I had a stomach problem. I was not eating food. I was just having pain. He gave me a Chinese herbal medicine. And after a week or two, I started eating well. First of all, it was a bit difficult, but after a week, I started now enjoying the medicine, the herbal medicine. It's very natural and no side effect.
At the time I was coming here, my breast tips were very, very sensitive and sometimes painful. But 2 weeks after the Moxa treatment and the herbal medicine, the sensitivity was not there and the pain was not there.
Many others just come here maybe to experience the thrill of having their bodies full of needles. Some love it, especially with the traditional Chinese music. Others come for the herbs that are sourced directly from China. While for others, they want to boost emotional well-being, relieve body pain, improve sleep or digestion. As things are, it seems that the traditional Chinese medication is in Kenya to stay as its popularity grows.
That Chinese music ends Andrew Asike's report from Nairobi. Now, still on health matters, we have a training video on our Facebook page, DW Africa. It's about electronic waste that is dumped in Africa and Asia, with Ghana being one of the countries most affected. Please just go to our Facebook page, as usual, DW Africa, and tell us what you think about what you see going on in that particular video. Now, I can see my colleague Jane Ngingi here once is excited to tell us more about sports. Jane.
That's right, Isaac, and the Confederation of African Football Champions League returns tomorrow on Tuesday. The matches will determine the remaining quarter-final spots. Samson Omale with more.
Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa are in danger of elimination as the struggle for CAF Champions League quarterfinals plays. The Pretoria outfit must win at home on Tuesday to prevent opponent Horoya of Guinea qualifying at their expense from a mini-league already won by title holders Wydad Casablanca. Group A record 8-time African champions Al Ahly of Egypt and Esperance of Tunisia have already qualified, which leaves bottom club Township Rollers of Botswana hoping to end a 4-match losing streak when they host Esperance. In Group B, TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the last of whose 5 Champions League titles came in 2015, are certain of taking top place after an unbeaten 5-match run. The Lubumbashi side hosts second place Diafa El Jadida of Morocco, who recently sold leading 2018 Champions League scorer Hamid Haddad to Zamalek of Egypt. Assuming TP Mazembe win, Moluda Alger will join them in the September 3 quarterfinals draw if they avoid defeat at home to fellow Algerian team Entete Sativ. Deji Ogembo and Andrew Randa, who are sports journalists based in Abuja, speaks on the likely final 8 qualifiers.
For teams like Esperance of Tunisia, Al Ahly, as well as Wydad Casablanca, not forgetting the Etoile du Sahel, they've already confirmed their spots in the quarterfinal, but there are still battles for second spots.
The CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederations Cup is going into the deep end this midweek. I've got some very, very fantastic matches to come through. You know, to get to the quarterfinals is going to be really, really dicey.
To Kenya now, and Gor Mahia clinched the Kenyan Premier League title with 6 games to go after beating arch-rivals AFC Leopards 2-0 in the Mashemeji Derby on Sunday at the Kasarani Stadium. Coming into the tie, Gor needed just a win to clinch the title, with their closest opponents, Bandari, being 20 points adrift. Dylan Kerr is the head coach of Gor Mahia FC.
Come on, you can't play this game and not win the league against your rivals. I mean, we'll never see that in another lifetime. I'll not be here, I'll not be alive when that happens again, to win the title against your rivals. It's a dream come true.
AFC Leopards coach Rodolfo Zapata was gracious in defeat.
We did cover mistakes, and the second half we created so many opportunities. But there are no excuses. We lost. And I want to congratulate Gor Mahia, and I wish them all the best in the international competition.
Still in Kenya, the junior volleyball team on Sunday started their campaign in the Under-20 African Cup of Nations Championship on a brilliant note by beating Tanzania 3-0, 25-15, 25-21, 25-11 at the Kasarani Indoor Arena. The Kenyan juniors are drawn in a relatively easy Pool A alongside Tanzania, Nigeria and Cameroon, thereby invading 7-time champions Egypt, who were cast in Pool B together with Uganda, Mauritius, Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda. And now to Uganda, where Kampala Capital City Authority Football Club, KCCA FC, emerged winners of the inaugural Plisnina Super 8 Cup after defeating Onduparaka FC 2-0 in the final played at the Mutesa II Stadium, Wankulukulu, on Saturday. Here is KCCA head coach Mike Mutebi.
All better players, better tactical discipline, and I think fitter, because Onduparaka, I think, started a little bit late.
That is Kampala Capital City Authority Football Club head coach Mike Mutebi.
Wow, what a wonderful roundup, you know, from our own Samson Omal. I'm looking forward to the Confederation, you know, Africa Cup of Tournament that begins tomorrow. All the action we'll be bringing to you whenever we get it. Now, to our, one of our stories that is trending and we've been covering, it's about no one else but Bobi Wine, or Kyagulanyi Robert. He's a member of parliament in Uganda. He has been released on bail, pending other cases to answer before the High Court. But the good thing is that he's out on bail. And you've been commenting on this story. Jane, please.
We have Robert, and he says, I really see Bobby's strength, and he's the hope for Uganda.
And Ampere Ben says, the release was to be expected. They are not the first political prisoners to be detained on framed cases and bailed out.
Another one from Tamba Saba. He says, where is the parliamentary immunity here? And if a lawmaker undergoes such a treatment in a country, what will happen to a taxi driver on the street?
A good question that many of you have been wondering, if lawmakers can be treated in that manner. How about ordinary citizens. Just keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And one from Daniel Anfield says, I hope they will all get justice as what is painted on them are mere allegations. African rulers who don't want to leave power, it's high time they thought of leaving power and hand over to youth of this generation. Many thanks for those comments. Many thanks for the debate. On behalf of the production crew behind the scenes, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.